It is Wednesday, June 14th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the gunman suspected of shooting a congressman is shot dead. A deadly fire destroys a huge tower in London.
The grief is turning to anger in the city because people are asking, those who survived this fire, asking not only how did it start, but why did it spread so fast?
And singer Justin Bieber releases a new single. It's all ahead. President Donald Trump announced that the gunman suspected of shooting Republican Congressman Stephen Scalise and several others Wednesday outside Washington has died from injuries sustained in a shootout with law enforcement officers. The president said that the 51-year-old lawmaker is being treated at a Washington hospital.
Steve Scalise, a member of House leadership, was shot and badly wounded and is now in stable condition at the hospital, along with two very courageous Capitol police officers. At least two others were also wounded. Many lives would have been lost if not for the heroic actions of the two Capitol police officers who took down the gunman despite sustaining gunshot wounds during a very, very brutal assault.
The shooter has been identified as 66-year-old James T. Hodgkinson of Belleville, Illinois, and that's according to government officials. Well, VOA White House correspondent Steve Herndman joins me in the studio. Steve, what is known about this suspect? Why did he target Republican members of Congress who were playing baseball?
Well, Sarah, we were out there this morning, and we heard from the FBI, the Alexandria Police Department chief, the Capitol Police, and the governor of Virginia. And they're being quite reticent on linking this to any political motivation. But this seems that it was obviously more than a coincidence. The shooter had a track record of not only violence, but also sending anti-Republican letters to his local newspaper in Illinois. One of the members of Congress who was participating in this practice said he believes that the gunman came up to him shortly before the shooting started and asked who the people were on the field. And then he was told they were members of Congress, asked whether they were Republicans or Democrats.
Yeah. So the scene there must have just, I'm sure people are really shocked. It's an area where a lot of people walk their dogs nearby. I'm sure kids play.
This is a revitalized neighborhood called Del Rey in Alexandria in suburban Washington, D.C. And it's a very quiet place. There's lots of little nice restaurants in there. It's very suburban, older, smaller homes, a very peaceful area. And the congressman had been practicing several times a week for a couple of months, preparing for this upcoming charity event game. It's one of the few visible public bipartisan events that occurs with members of Congress for the public these days. And so it seems like it was not just a coincidence that this was some sort of a random shooting, that he may have been aware that they had been out there practicing for some time.
Well, going forward, this will have an impact on, I would think, members of Congress or high-ranking officials, because this man was just able to come upon these guys.
Well, the only reason I think that the casualty toll was not higher, Sarah, is because Steve Scalise is the majority whip. He's high enough ranking in Congress that there was actually a security detail with him. And if there had not been any armed security, and you have someone firing with a rifle, people out on a baseball field, it probably would have been much worse.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Steve. That's VOA White House correspondent Steve Herndman. David Gomez is formerly with the FBI and is now a senior fellow at the George Washington University Center for Cyber and Homeland Security. He talks with VOA's Philip Alexio, who asked Gomez what kind of security detail do members of Congress typically have.
Well, members of Congress, individual members of Congress, usually don't have security details at all. Only the senior leadership of both the House and the Senate are entitled to a security detail from the Capitol Police.
So if Representative Scalise was not there, what do you think would have happened?
Well, as Representative Scalise was the only one entitled to a security detail, there wouldn't have been any police officers there to intervene with the shooter. I think it would have been tragic. There were representatives hiding in the baseball dugout, which for your listeners is actually a below ground level area where the ball players wait as they're waiting to play, and they were basically trapped. So had the shooter recognized that they were down there, they would have been immediately targeted and probably been several more victims shot or wounded.
So where does an investigation like this go? It has been determined that the shooter has died from his wounds. So there would be more to this investigation, obviously. So what branches would this investigation start to take form?
Well, there's concurrent jurisdiction here. You have the Virginia Police, State Police. You have the Alexandria Police. But the primary jurisdiction belongs to the FBI because it's an assault on a federal officer or a member of Congress. The FBI apparently will be doing a number of background investigations on the shooter. Because the FBI is nationwide, I'm sure that right now leads are going out to Illinois, where the shooter was a resident, to the offices in Chicago and probably Indiana, other areas around there, to cover background leads as to who this person was, what were his politics, had he made any statements. Other FBI agents will be perusing the cyber realm and looking to see whether he had Facebook accounts, Twitter accounts, Instagram, and whether he had posted anything that would lead us to form a conclusion as to his motives.
So when you talk about security, this was a congressional baseball game or softball game that they were gathering to play, but is there any sort of detail that would be assigned if a number of members of Congress came together, or does it really require one of the top members to be there in order to have any security at all?
It really requires a senior member of leadership to be there for any security to be provided, and I really believe that that's going to change, because as Senator Paul Rand stated this morning on a number of news stations, they had been practicing on a regular basis. This was a regular morning event where members of Congress would get together to, you know, play baseball, softball, practice in the morning before they went to their jobs at Congress in preparation for this charity game. There are a number of events that congressmen and women go to attend in their capacity as representatives where maybe a senior leadership doesn't show up and there is no security. So I think you're going to see legislation passed that's going to give increased authority to both the Capitol Police and maybe the Federal Protective Service to provide armed security at a lot of these events where no security was previously provided.
This former FBI agent, David Gomez. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Andrew, I know this has had a lot of reaction on social media.
Definitely. And as we heard in that interview, talking about if this gunman had any social media profiles, that being part of the investigation, apparently people have found a Facebook account for this shooter once his name was released, able to discern from that he had very opposing views to President Trump, people saying that he would go on political rants on this Facebook page, and that he apparently was a volunteer for Senator Bernie Sanders when he was running for president. Now, Senator Sanders has come out and said that he totally disowns this act and says it's a horrible act of violence. But people trying to piece together if this might have been a politically motivated crime and using this Facebook page to do so. And people also going to the website Yelp, which is a place where you can leave reviews for businesses, and they're leaving reviews for this gentleman's business in the state of Illinois where he lived. People putting up different comments and things. That's one of the things that we see happen sometimes is as soon as people, their social media is discovered or anything that's linked to them is discovered, people start putting up comments and start liking the page and following the page. So we're going to, I think, continue to see that. No word yet if the social network is going to shut any of that down. We're also seeing, on the other side of social media, tributes and well wishes pouring in for the victims, including from former Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords. She, of course, was shot in the head during a meeting with her constituents and has become an advocate for gun safety and gun control. She tweeted out and said, "My heart is with my former colleagues, their families and staff, and the U.S. Capitol Police, public servants and heroes today and every day." So very strong words from someone who was herself a victim of gun violence while she was serving in the House of Representatives.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories we're following. Zambia's political rift deepens as opposition MPs are suspended. Two top Michigan officials are charged in the Flint water crisis. Islamic State militants capture Tora Bora in Afghanistan. And the UN chief calls for a political solution to the Afghan conflict. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOANews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A group of scientists using NASA's Airborne Stratospheric Observatory for Infrared Astronomy, or SOFIA, recently completed a study that confirmed their previous findings about a young and nearby planetary system. The researchers found that the system surrounding the star Epsilon Eridani has an architecture that resembles our own solar system. Our solar system has the asteroid belt and the Kuiper belt, two circumstellar disks filled with various debris such as asteroids, comets, and other objects. The research team found and then confirmed that the Epsilon Eridani system also has two debris disks circling in similar positions and distances as those in our own planetary system. The researchers also found evidence that a planet with about the same mass as Jupiter circles its star at a distance similar of our giant planet to the Sun. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, singer Justin Bieber's new single is called To You, and we'll hear it. Firefighters in London continue to battle one of the city's biggest fire disasters in recent memory. Police say at least 12 people were killed as a rapidly moving blaze raced through a 24-story apartment building in West London in the pre-dawn hours Wednesday, trapping residents. I spoke with VOA London correspondent Luis Ramirez.
The fire is still burning more than 15 hours after it started, and rescue crews are still in what they're calling a search and rescue mode. This is happening as big questions are coming up. The grief is turning to anger in the city because people are asking, those who survived this fire are asking not only how did it start, but why did it spread so fast? We're talking about a 24-story tower that was recently renovated. Britain has some of the world's most stringent fire codes. That's because of history. And so there are big questions on what went wrong here.
Well, no doubt an investigation will be continuing, in regard to this. But who lives in this building?
Well, the North Kensington area is a densely populated area that's very diverse, multi-ethnic, and that's pretty much the demographic of this tower. About 120 apartments there, a real mix of elderly people, immigrants, people of all religions. And so it really is a microcosm of London in this age. And so many families living there. Some of the most poignant pictures that we've seen is of children being evacuated from there, reports of a mother having to throw her child from the window, that we have reports that the child is okay. Just very, very poignant scenes, but ultimately a very, very mixed community.
Have they been able to get enough personnel, emergency personnel, to respond to this?
Well, yes, the response was quite impressive. In fact, firefighters turned up at the scene within 6 minutes of the first call. And so right away, it was very clear this was an extremely serious situation. And the London firefighters showed up at 200 of them at the in the initial moments. They've stayed on the on task, but this is a very, very difficult situation. Such a large building, and the fire having spread so quickly. Now, some of the questions are coming up: is why exactly did it spread so quickly? Some of the residents are expressing anger that they said a lot of them did not hear any fire alarms whatsoever. Some said they heard fire alarms, but very far away. There were no sprinklers going off. And then there was also the issue of the old instruction people get when you're in a high rise and a fire breaks out, and stay put, don't try to go anywhere. And that, for a lot of people, tragically, did not work this time.
And I can imagine a number of people are being treated at hospitals. I've also heard stories about the community around is trying to help people that have been affected by this fire.
Yes, certainly. All area hospitals, five of them, got ready very quickly and took in the scores of people who were injured, with everything from smoke inhalation to other injuries resulting from a very rapid evacuation. At last count, there were 74 people, and 20 of them in critical condition. We have seen an outpouring of kindness in this neighborhood, where people tend to get along very well, people opening their homes for those who've been displaced. Charitable organizations are also out in force helping, trying to find temporary housing, providing emergency cash, and just otherwise trying to take care of people who have suddenly been left homeless. We're seeing churches opening their doors, mosques opening their doors to help.
That's VOA London correspondent Luis Ramirez. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. French DJ David Guetta and singer Justin Bieber have combined forces and released a new single that's shooting up the charts. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins me with the details.
Justin, who was discovered in 2008 on YouTube, put out his debut EP called My World in 2009. He became the first artist to have 7 songs make it onto the charts from his debut album. And in 2010, he put out My World, which brought him his first number one song, Baby. So for today, it's the latest song from Justin Bieber, and this song is called To You.
No limit in the sky that I won't fly for you. No amount of tears in my eyes that I won't cry for you.
All right, Larry. Well, now, Justin Bieber, over the years, his image has changed, I guess you could say. He started out, he was like really, really clean cut, sort of this innocent young boy. And, you know, now he's got some tattoos. He's kind of a different image.
Well, it's a different image, but he's also a little older, more mature. You know, when we all discovered him, he needed his parents' permission for tattoos. Now he doesn't anymore, but Justin's had a, you know, as you say, an up and down ride. It was great to see him perform on stage at the One Love Manchester concert. You saw an emotional side. He broke down into tears, talked about religion, urged the crowd to love one another, and it really moved him. You could see he was very sincere when he was on stage in Manchester. And the very next day, he went and he joined a Manchester hockey team called the Storm, on Monday because he loves hockey. He's from Canada. and he skated with them, and then he donated his stick, and he autographed the jersey he wore. And they're going to auction those things off for charity to raise money for a charity that they're involved with in Manchester. But he's got some good sides to him and shows those good sides every once in a while. And unfortunately, every time he says, hey, I'm on the right track now, I'm going to do better, I've grown up, I'm going to improve, something comes up to side rail him a little bit. But nonetheless, his career is doing great. He was just recently number one for a couple of weeks here in the U.S., and in the UK with a song that he was a part of called Despacito, the first Spanish song to hit number one since Macarena in 1996. And the song originally created by Luis Fonsi. Luis spoke with Rolling Stone magazine and said that he was a little bit reluctant to let an English-speaking person who doesn't speak Spanish sing on the song because it's in Spanish. But he said, well, you know, it's Justin Bieber, let's give it a try. So it was a good decision. However, Justin, a couple weeks ago, was performing in concert, forgot the words to the song when he was performing his show, and substituted Despacito for the word burrito. And this past week, during a concert that he was performing in Stockholm, he said, I'm not going to sing Despacito because I've forgotten the words. Fans got upset. One hurled a water bottle at him.
Oh, no.
So they wanted to hear the song, but he admits to struggling with the lyrics in another language. So we're happy that he's back, and I'm sure his 88 million followers on social media are thrilled. He posted the video to the new song, To You, which, by the way, features a number of Victoria's Secret supermodels. So he was going for a different angle this time around. But it's a great song, To You. I love it. And his Purpose Tour continues through the rest of the summer. He'll end up in Tokyo, Japan with the last show September 24th.
Yeah. He just needs to remember to bring a copy of the lyrics with him.
That's right. And no one would fault him for a little cheat sheet. It isn't his language after all. So why not?
Okay. Thanks a lot, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings.
When it comes to watch me speak from my heart when it comes to you.
Well, the music of Justin Bieber brings us to the end of our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The six-month campaign by the Iraqi army to take back the city of Mosul from ISIS is coming to an end. The terrorist group captured Mosul and looked toward capturing Baghdad itself, but has since lost most of Mosul to Iraq's armed forces and is clinging to a handful of pockets within the far western reaches of the city. It is now just a matter of time before the last ISIS extremists are killed or chased from the city. But as they prepare for a last stand, the terrorists are ever more brutal in their treatment of Mosul's civilian population. According to the Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, ISIS has killed over 200 people in the last 3 weeks. Entire families, including children, have been murdered by the terrorists. Zaid Ra'ad al-Hussein, the High Commissioner for Human Rights, said shooting children as they try to run to safety with their families. Really, there are no words of condemnation strong enough. Clearly, these amount to war crimes. ISIS has used human shields in the past and killed people who have tried to leave the city, but now the slaughter and other abuses are escalating. ISIS is locking entire families in basements with no food or water and welding the doors shut and booby-trapping streets and houses with explosives to prevent people from leaving. So we are working very closely with Iraqi security forces on the plan to ensure that we defeat the remaining fighters in Mosul, while also doing our utmost to protect the civilian life that Daesh is so aggressively trying to take, said Special Presidential Envoy Brett McGurk. but it's a really important reminder of what's happening right now, of the true face of this enemy. They are mass murderers. They are barbaric. They are a threat to all civilization, all humanity, and those civilians in Mosul trapped, being held hostage by ISIS, we will do everything we can in supporting the Iraqi security forces to free them.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.